Oh, my auction house bid didn't go through.
Fuck.
Dang it.
That guy outbid me.
This was a sniper. Oh, hey, internet, we didn't see you there. We were just playing some popular computer games.
We're playing some Train Simulator 2012.
Yeah, we're playing Blizzard Edition. We're playing the new Luxor, and it's episode 87 of the Beardcast, and the gang's all here. I'm Wes Gardner, your host, right over there. The other clicker, we got Brian Belita.
I'm Brian Belita, and I just broke my mouse.
Oh,
I didn't actually.
Oh, I was about to say the irony, because after this we're gonna log on to Diablo. We have Mark Bradshaw.
Log on to a single-player game that seems... Mark Bradshaw.
Hey, guys, I got some good news.
Yeah?
I just got $75 million from Rhode Island state government, because apparently they're willing to fund any stupid bullshit that you can throw at them.
Oh,
so,
well done.
They apparently have a stupid bullshit department, so I got it covered.
The wing of judicial government.
It occurs to me that Mark Bradshaw is our David Jaffe.
Wait, what? Is that...
And that he's white and angry? Good?
And then he's white and angry, pretty much, that's it. Well, not angry, but he swears a lot.
Yeah.
Oh. Are you saying I should stop swearing so much?
No, but by all means, embrace your Jaffiness.
Oh.
See, now I'm worried about this.
I know I have. Mwah, mwah, mwah. We also have Imran Khan.
I've been delayed to 2013.
Ooh. Is it February?
It's probably February, but we're not ready to give those details vis-a-vis the date right now. We're just trying to make the best Imran we can.
Well, can you at least announce an announcement?
We will announce an announcement at E3.
At E3?
No, wait, hold on. That's one level deeper than I was willing to go.
Inception.
I just asked for the announcement of an announcement. You announced the announcement of an announcement.
We are breaking new paradigms here.
That's it.
You got to go deeper.
Can we expect this same type of controversy from the final Imran product?
The final Imran product will be a game that... I'm trying to think of a good doublespeak for PR. We have gamers in mind.
Defies convention.
This Imran has been made by Imrans for Imrans.
So is the translation that this Imran will work after the first patch?
Also, it's weird you say first pitch, because the game made for Imrans by Imrans is actually a cricket game.
Oh.
From Kurt Schilling.
Kurt Schilling's Con Cricket 2013.
Now, that game could make a profit.
Cricket Conquest.
Think about it. Oh, man.
Oh,
you are breaking new name punning ground here.
Kurt's Cricket Conquest.
We have Matt Pierce right there.
Hello, everybody. I'm just picturing Kurt Schilling playing cricket like King Ralph.
I wonder if Rhode Island can get a deal to where it says, as presented by Rhode Island, on every box of Kingdoms of Amalur.
Well, all the... what network is that? It's Scripps? The Scripps network that does like HGTV. Most of their stuff is funded with support from the Canadian government, so there's always something in the credits at the end, you know, like paid for with a subsidy from the Ontario Board of Arts and
proceeds from the following. Yeah, like the old PBS stuff. Oh, that's weird.
So they should do like Canada, make them dissolve and reform the company every season.
Congrats on the baby, Matt, by the way.
Twice. Yeah, I have a baby who is...
How's that going?
My wife is watching her, so I get to podcast.
It's the same deal here.
Let me watch the baby!
we talked about this a little bit last week. The child's name, have you decided on a nickname for it yet, or is she going to be able to shorten her own name as she sees fit, or how do you plan on working this?
I don't know, it'll just shake itself out, but we're gonna
the
end
best
up
thing
pulling...
you can say about babies.
That's,
it's fine. It'll shake itself out.
That's the best dad answer that I would have given. That same dad answer for
okay,
like
You can't see it now, but I'm sure your wife is glaring at you through the walls.
Slowly, just shaking her head.
She's got hypersensitive hearing now as a mother.
That is a weird thing.
Where did you hear that?
Yes,
shaking babies.
Smell.
Yeah, shaking babies is a weird thing.
Oh.
I think we should just go ahead and say, guys, don't shake your babies if you're going to be a new father.
We don't
actually advocate that.
Nightshirtbeard Corporation does not endorse the shaking of small children and infants.
Also, like, don't let your baby lie on its stomach because apparently it'll try to die.
It'll try to die.
It will do its damnedest.
Yeah, if there's anything that you hear over and over and over again, it's that everything is toxic to babies.
Yeah. Absolutely everything. You ate hot dogs during pregnancy? Oh, God. Oh, God, that's terrible. Oh,
and then you find out that in reality, there's like some urban legend and everybody just goes with it because
it's
no
just that one story.
When you take a look at the legitimate things that are dangerous to babies and you wonder like how any children survived through like the 1950s.
Right,
because
yeah.
we were doing some stupid shit back in the day, and somehow every child died.
Yeah,
right. And now we don't get the chance because parents are overprotective and everything. Skittles are murdering our children.
Right,
and we don't get the chance to be fucking idiots.
Like the things they say will kill your baby now are like blankets and pillows.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like you can't do it if you set them on their side and they're 5 feet away from the pillow. Some toxic radiation's gonna hit it. Like they can never explain what they really mean. Oh no, you can't mix the formula in with the water before you microwave it. You have to, and it's like just fucking make the formula. Like as long as the baby's eating, like that's fine. Yeah.
Well, apparently, from my understanding, an infant will naturally attach itself to anything that will immediately suffocate it.
Yeah,
like blankets or like mattresses or anything. That's so true. Apparently, like in the future, we're just going to have to like put babies in like little magnetic levitation like cradles, because apparently those little fuckers will just stick to anything.
Yeah.
Mark's America.
I'm just trying to protect our babies, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm just imagining like so babies have like their own gravitational force that just like I'm just imagining this baby is just like what is going on, and it's like sliding along the ground towards a blanket.
It is true. I will tell you, Brian and Matt, tell me if I'm wrong here, that you'll look at the baby and the baby's adorable and you're looking, you turn around for a second to grab something, you come back down and the baby has something now that it didn't have.
It was like on top of the shelf.
Yeah. Like pulled four pillows over itself, and I was like, how did you, what is this?
You don't even have a control over your neck. How the fuck did you do that?
I wouldn't know. I can't quite look at my baby yet. This Saturday, though, that's the alleged due date.
Really?
Yep, Memorial Day weekend.
So you're good luck full term. Like, going the
distance. Yep. Going the distance.
I mean, that's a good trick, though, because if you go ahead and have the kid on Memorial Day, you can't forget the kid's birthday.
I can't forget pretty much anything, Mark.
Where?
Memorial Day is always Monday, though.
Oh, that's a good point. It's always floating. Okay.
Yeah. Shit. Although it's so every year the parkour community has this really big jam that's held in D.C. A big get together. People come over from all over the country, different states, different countries as well, and they all kind of converge on D.C. and we have a big gathering where we just basically run and jump and slump jump around D.C.
Just wall jumping up the Washington Monument. It's a real
basically, thing. and that's this weekend. So I'm missing out on that.
So you're totally going there, right?
Oh yeah, no, I'm absolutely gonna be there. So like in the future I'd be like, whoop, it's your birthday, guess what we're doing. Dad, are we doing parkour again?
Please.
They're both going parkour. That's how they're inducing
my knees
pregnancy.
Hurt. What was that, Matt?
I said they're both going, that's how they're inducing pregnancy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
just next year whenever you go to the jam, just wear one of those baby vests.
Yep. I got it, man. I got two.
Just one for backup.
Just in case. Yeah.
So what were we saying about tangents?
Yeah. Oh, 38 Studios in Rhode Island and all that goodness. It's
I'm wondering how did what was he? He was a catcher, right?
When he played. No, he was a pitcher. He was a pitcher. Yeah. I mean he's most famous in he's gonna be a Hall of Fame pitcher, like when Allinson's done. I don't know, but he is famous for basically being the guy who finally brought a championship to Boston. He was the pitcher there for that.
So how on earth did he get a game studio?
He has an enormous amount of money because he made a lot, because he's a great pitcher. Like he's probably like one of the two or three best pitchers of his era. So he had an enormous amount of money, and he played forever because pitchers can do that if they don't get injured. So, and it turns out the dude is like a huge geek. And I feel bad for him, aside from the part where it's kind of hilarious that he's a huge libertarian and he's begging like the taxpayers of Rhode Island for this money back. But he's actually a decent guy, and he's a huge geek, and he just loves games. But I wonder if like he has any of his fortune left over after this disaster.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I guess I can't be too snide about it because Tygon Studios, whatever Vin Diesel Studios was called, you know, that they did pretty okay.
Yeah.
They made decent games.
Yeah, they did. And Kingdom of Amalur, I mean, we had complaints with it, but not a bad game, especially for a first game.
It was inoffensive.
Yeah.
That's an ambitious first game, though.
It is true.
It was rebooted, like, twice, wasn't it?
I think
like it got a development hell and then came back and then canceled and came back again.
Right, and then they kind of grafted it after their upcoming MMO Copernicus, which they showed that footage like, here's the teaser trailer for Copernicus. It was like, it took you guys 5 years to make these environments. They look good, but there was nothing else in there. It was just environments and a dolly camera just swooping around for like 3 minutes.
And that reminds me, I saw some trailer today for, hold on, let me find the name real quick. It was like, you know, one of these, Kung Fu Superstar, which is a Kinect game, you know, where you, here we go, Kung Fu Superstar is the world's first action game where players fight using real Kung Fu techniques that the game teaches them. And it's got like the camera swooping around, you know, trying to show everything, and like the actual game doesn't, can you imagine a game like that where you just had no control over the camera, just swooped around constantly?
I played that game. It's called Ninja Gaiden.
I guess that's true.
But could you imagine one that's also motion controlled, though?
Right.
That's disorienting.
That's called Kung Fu Superstar.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Boy.
I actually looking up Kurt Schilling on baseballreference.com. He made over $100 million in his career, all said and done.
It's not enough. It's enough.
Spent it all on his crippling Fabergé egg habit.
Yeah. Well, that's only 25% more than what he got as a loan from Rhode Island.
That's right. Crazy. How did Rhode Island say yes?
They wanted jobs.
And they got 300 jobs out of this fucking studio.
For $75 million? How much are these people paid?
And not only that $75 million, but it's going to cost them like over $200 million because they're going to miss out on like the interest payments and shit.
Ugh.
So, yeah, that's not a... I maybe it's like some initiative to like kickstart like tech jobs in Rhode Island,
right.
But it's yeah.
That's a poor way to do it. Oh,
I don't understand why they're still or why they've been trying to make an MMO for the last couple of years. At a certain point, you should realize that very few companies can do that well, and the ones that do have oodles and oodles of cash and aren't taking loans from the government.
And not only that, but BioWare, having the Star Wars license, still couldn't take out World of Warcraft.
Yeah. And they just lost a bunch of people. EA axed most of that studio.
Yeah, because, I mean, it did well for them. And, I mean, they're keeping fairly decent retention rates. But
it's just too expensive to make new content for that
game. Exactly. It's too time-consuming and it's too expensive.
But, yeah, 300 people given an average salary, well, average in this part of the country is like 50 grand. So even if they're just being paid regular salaries, that's still 15 mil a year.
Considering where they're at, they probably couldn't get away with $50,000 or something. You're talking about like in New England. They couldn't get away with $50,000.
Yeah, when you look at total compensation, including payroll taxes and all that stuff, you're looking at least $100,000 per employee per year. That's $30 million a year. That's a lot of money.
That is
just to keep the staff employed.
Yeah, not to mention assets and development.
And the one game they produced sold 40,000 copies. I mean, excuse me, 400,000 copies.
Yeah, it sold pretty decently, considering for it's a new IP released at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so, kind of like in a bad period, because, I mean, there was a ton of, like, that style of RPG out at that time.
Yeah, it was like a month or two after Skyrim, I think.
Yeah, and then everyone was getting excited for Mass Effect. So,
you gotta wonder where MMOs have left to go, because, you know, Star Wars Galaxies covers the space genre pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
World of Warcraft has covered the sort of Tolkien-esque fantasy for a very long time very well.
But that didn't stop, like, every other fucking developer from trying to make a Tolkien...
Right.
Well, they tried.
Yeah.
Well, there's no room for it.
As far as that goes, Matt, have you read up at all about The Secret World?
No.
Because that looks to be doing some interesting things as far as not, I guess, being just a... I don't know, maybe that's a terrible way to describe it, but not being just a video game. Like, there's, you know, tie-ins with actually doing... Because it takes place in sort of modern day.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's stuff like looking shit up on the internet to solve something in the game.
This is the one that, like, calls you in the middle of the night with weird shit.
I don't know. Does it?
That sounds off-putting.
Well, that's something that EA tried
hey, Matt,
a long time
it's
ago.
It's a secret world. How come you haven't logged in yet?
EA tried that ages ago with some, this is like in the early CD.
Yeah, Majestic. A while ago. Majestic. Yeah. That was such a crazy game. You had to give it your fax number, and it would send you faxes at work and be like, help me, I'm being murdered. And people would
because
like,
people had faxes back then.
And then people would like, just imagine if you were at work, you gave them the work number, not thinking anything of it. They send a really threatening thing over fax, and like your boss picks it up. It's like, a fucking dungeon knife. What are you talking about?
Where's my office now? You we gotta save this guy.
For that piece of paper.
Oh, man.
You could always, if you're making an MMO now, you could go into what Terra did and focus on creepy fetishism.
Oh, that's a bizarre game.
Actually, I don't think the idea behind the game is that bad. Like, an MMO with a more action battle system sounds great. But then they had to go all, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Freaky and weird.
Well, okay, so,
and then the community gets pissed off for, like, the little bit of censorship they did do to the game in order to, like, try to, like, not have the FBI burn down the studio and arrest everyone involved.
Pretty much. Some of that stuff is pretty scandalous. But what's really weird to me now is kind of the evolution of MMOs is going back to games that already came out and didn't work because they were ahead of their time, like PlanetSide, Tabula Rasa. You know, here's
things that... Was Tabula Rasa ahead of its time, or was it just a pain in the ass?
It had a really nice art style.
Tabula Rasa was great because it had that same sort of action. It was almost like a third-person Borderlands in a lot of ways. Yeah. But
did Brad McQuaid wind up doing anything after EverQuest, or did he just...
He worked on Vanguard.
Okay.
You remember Vanguard? No one,
yeah,
one no. else does either.
What was that really pretty MMO coming out? They released the teasers like Space, and it's got a really neat art style, kind of cartoony star. It's
not Kingdoms of Amalur, because that shit's not coming out.
Everything you described has been the Old Republic.
But
are you sure you're not confusing with EVE Online?
I'm very sure. Fuck. It looks like WildStar. That's what
WildStar.
It is.
Yeah, because it's
really funny. I just searched for Star MMO, and it's the second result. The first is Star Wars.
Nice.
It basically looks like Torchlight, but in space.
Wait a minute. Yeah. I'm just curious. Like, go back and do that search again, and where does Star Trek show up?
Oh yeah, that was an MMO, wasn't it?
Okay.
It
goes Star Wars, WildStar, Star Legends. An
everyone
Android
listening to this
Star
is
Conflict.
Now reminded that Star Trek exists.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a Star Trek Online like 8 down, but it's a video on YouTube. It's not the actual site.
It's free to play now. So
I'm in Golf Star Online Golf MMO. I'm fucking out of here.
This segment proudly brought to you by Star Trek Online, now free to play.
How long until I assume WoW will never go free to play.
No, it probably won't.
Maybe like, after they do their next MMO, like years after.
Yeah.
But how long until, let's say, Old Republic goes?
I'd say give it about another year.
Within the year. Because they're going to have to cut their losses on that shit pretty soon. I mean,
I assume Terra's going to go soon. Because
Terra's
going to
go real quick. Because I'm surprised it took...
I'm so surprised it's not right now. This is kind of news that it's not free to play right now.
Well, that's the problem with MMOs, is that you make all these decisions about membership and, you know, how the game's going to go and look and all that 5 years before you actually release it.
Yeah.
So that's why, look at the description of the Elder Scrolls MMO. It sounds like WoW.
Yeah.
And they probably did it when it sounds like WoW was an incredibly big bullet point.
And their PR is terrible on it, because they're like, don't worry, guys, you can play the entire game by yourself. And it's like, I have an Elder Scrolls game I can play by myself. Actually, I have 5 of them.
Well, on the other side of things, I saw something on Twitter today. I want to say it was Steve Gainer, maybe? I don't know. There was someone who's, I don't know, maybe they were in talks or writing a review about Diablo or something, and they heard back, you know, they're saying that the single player, you know, wasn't very fun playing alone. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't know, somehow came up that, you know, they said, well, it's not for single player. I don't remember. I'm trying to find it now.
Sure.
Isn't that pretty much every next-gen game of the past 3 or 4 years?
Yeah.
Like, the single player is garbage. 10 out of 10.
Yeah, exactly. Nickels aside. Yeah, it's silly. But yeah,
Alec Mir, who, one of the co-owners of Rock Paper Shotgun. And it, like, he got an email sent to him, I guess on probably the article he wrote. Mm-hmm. Okay, so never mind. So I got this completely backwards. But yeah, on the article he wrote, which I think got a lot of flack. So he apparently had an email sent to him saying, playing Diablo 3 single player is quite simply not the way to play the game. And of course his response is, so why did they include it then?
Yeah. See, here's the main perception. I mean, do we want to go over that on the Diablo 3 talk, or do we want to do that right now?
To go over what?
Diablo 3. Just because that's kind of a nice segue into.
We can talk about Diablo 3.
Yeah, we'll talk about it, because that's really the only thing.
Are Wes and I the only ones that have been playing it, I think?
I think so.
I haven't, so.
Haven't been playing it. Right. I wonder if Mark's away from keyboard, but I don't know if he got it or not. I know he was looking to get it, but wanted some feedback first. But
yeah. Well, anyways.
But yeah, from that article, you know, he does make a good point. If single player is not the way to play it, then why they include it? But also, it's kind of misguiding to say that Diablo is a single player game, because it's an online game. That's kind of the best way to think about it, is the game is an online game. It's very much fueled by an auction house. It's very much fueled by drop-in, drop-out co-op. These main principles behind the way the game functions, it's a cog in the machine. And online is required for that. Not necessarily to play the game, but for everything else for the game. It's like, why do I have to be online on Steam to be able to chat with people or join someone's Left 4 Dead game? It's kind of the same thing. But anyways, yeah, we can actually just talk about the game itself. Like, how are you liking it? I know, Brian, you did not play Diablo 2.
Not very much, no.
And I'm actually interested in what you think about any of the changes Diablo's made, or
I don't know. I remember I watched my friends play a lot of Diablo 2, and correct me if I'm wrong, Diablo 3 doesn't seem quite as open.
Correct.
As far as, you know, traveling around, going around to places.
Right.
Okay. So all right. So I'm right on that. It seems much more guided. I mean, they have like the big areas, which I guess are randomized to some extent with kind of little modules, occasional random events that pop up and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I guess they're, you know, dungeons and stuff too. But it seems much more fragmented than Diablo 2, from what I can tell.
Yeah, and I.
But I mean, that's like, you know, that's a small thing and not really affecting how much I'm enjoying it, which is a lot. And yeah, I mean, I've been playing a lot of single player, which works fine. I mean, it definitely kind of comes into its own, as with most things, when you start getting team play into it, yeah. When, you know, people are playing their different roles. But no, I'm super enjoying it. Absolutely.
Yeah, and see, you're totally correct about, like, the way Diablo 2 was set up is it's almost big splotches of a map that then bleed into another big splotch of a map. And then in between those little areas, you have small little town hubs, you know, that start off the act. Right. And then there's only the one hub, and then you just run everywhere else, you yeah. know. And that's how it worked. And, you know, it gave a little bit, in my opinion, a better sense of exploration that way. But
well, and this is why I really think Grim Dawn is going to appeal a lot to people that
right.
really enjoyed Diablo 2 and are maybe disappointed by Diablo 3.
I think so. I think Grim Dawn is going to be awesome because it's going to have that open world mentality. But the reason why I'm so excited for it is the fact that Grim Dawn is going to have factions.
Yeah, that's pretty neat.
Like, that sounds really cool, because that's usually my favorite stuff in Elder Scrolls games is, you know, doing quests for the Dark Brotherhood or, you know, doing things like that. So I'm hoping they use that sort of mentality in Grim Dawn. But as far as Diablo 3 is concerned, I think it's a more focused experience. Like, it definitely has a story to tell you. And everything you're doing is revolving around that story. In Diablo 2...
Does the story involve demons?
A few. You know...
Yes. I'm led to believe.
I will say, though, that Blizzard has a knack for telling the most generic stories. But the side stories are always the things that really stand out. You know, in a lot of ways, maybe like an Elder Scrolls game. Because I remember all my stuff for the Dark Brotherhood and the Thieves Guild and Oblivion, but I couldn't really tell you what the F happened in the main story. Like, I remember it, but it wasn't extravagant. And I think the same thing's for Diablo. So the attention, or the beauty's in the details for the Diablo series, and there's always something new to notice. And that's why I played Diablo 2 for years and years and years, and I'm probably going to do the same thing with Diablo 3.
Yeah. I mean, and there's a lot of there is the single player content, but then there's a lot of content as far as character progression and items and stuff like that. And I don't know, for me, of course, it's a huge appeal is the loot and, you know, finding that cool item.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Do you think that the auction house takes away from that? Like,
I think so a bit. I mean, it provides an easy way for people to share these items and also profit on them.
Yeah.
And it's really easy.
You can just ignore it entirely, though, right?
Yes.
You can ignore it entirely, which is fine. You can absolutely do that, and it's easy to do.
Yeah, that's what I do. I ignore it. But the only bad thing is they built the game, and I mentioned this in my article on Nitrobeard. They built the game around the auction house. So if you sell back like a nice, like, oh, my metal plate leggings, I'm going to sell them to the merchant. He's going to give you 2 gold. And you're like, these are worth like 10 times that much. But then you go on the auction house and you can sell them for 9,000. You know what I mean? So there's disconnect.
Well, right. I mean, there's like the whole pricing of things is crazy. Like, you can set a initial bid price and then you can set a buyout price. Mm-hmm. If somebody doesn't want to, you know, possibly be outbid, they can just buy it out for a higher price. So there are people, of course, that, you know, set something like, oh, I want 99,000 for this, and they'd never get it. And then there's, you know, some guy who's like, you know, I found it. You know, I'll put it up for like $600 if they want to buy it, or sorry, you know, 600 coins. And then if they want to buy it, 2,000 coins.
Yeah.
So you can find some really good stuff for reasonably priced on there. But yeah, you can ignore it by and large, because like if you load up the auction house looking for monk fist weapons, you'll just see a shit ton of flesh rakers. Like, yep. And that happens a lot because it's people like, oh, well, this is the best thing, so this is what people want.
Which is
kind of you just, yeah.
Yeah, it's the same way in World of Warcraft. Usually people are going to buy out stuff in the middle. Like, they're going to buy the stuff, well, this isn't my main character, but I'm really annoyed with the boss that I'm fighting right now, so I just need something with higher DPS for my level 20. They'll buy that, and they'll buy it for a pretty good amount of money. But yeah, a lot of people are going to go grind for the same exact gear, and God knows what the auction house will look like once real money is brought into it. Because the real money auction house still isn't up yet. It's going to be up in the next...
I don't even want to deal with that at all. I mean, I may look at the, you know, the in-game currency-based one if, you know, if I want a better weapon for a character or whatever. But by and large, I'm not even going to bother with it unless I want some gold. I will sell stuff, but I won't buy stuff. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, that's probably the best way to do it. You could just use the gold to level up your artisans and your...
Well, exactly, exactly. But I know in your comparison on Nitrobeard, you were talking about Torchlight 2.
Yeah, man.
And so Torchlight 2 still has, like, dealing with identify scrolls and shit like that.
Yes.
And that is really annoying.
Yeah, it is. And that's my biggest qualm with it. Is
so how does like Diablo 2 and 3 handle it? Because remember in Diablo 1 you had to take your shit over to the guy in the town to have it
identified. Yeah, you had to take it to Deckard Cain. In Diablo 2 you had a scroll of identify and a scroll of town portal. So you'd like right click on the scroll of identify and then you'd click on the item you needed to identify, because it wouldn't give you any stats. It would just be like a red item and be like, this needs to be identified.
Yeah.
And then you do it.
And that's the Torchlight model.
Right, and that's what Torchlight's doing. And in my article, I think I said Torchlight 2 is a fantastic game for the year 2000.
Okay.
And it feels like Diablo 2.5.
That's probably what they're going for, really.
Yeah, I think so. And for some people, that's all they'll ever want. You know what I mean?
Well, it's a smart way for them to go, because they know they can't make Diablo 4, but what they can do is target the changes made in Diablo 3 and hope to get those guys who are pissed off those changes.
Correct, exactly. And that's really what they're keying in on. And a lot of the same team that's on the Torchlight team worked on Diablo 2. So if anybody knows how to make Diablo 2.5, it's the Diablo 2 team. And... Right. And
so how does Diablo 3 handle, like, identifying stuff?
You just, well, and I was actually, I was having this conversation with a friend. Like, he was like, so we you know, you find an unidentified item. Basically, if it's in your inventory mark, you can just right-click it, and then it'll have a little loading bar, and then you find out what it is.
Huh.
Yeah.
To which some people just kind of ask why. Like, just tell me what it is. Just tell me what it fucking is. But there's something satisfying.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, I can see
about
that.
About right-clicking
still get
and be like, ooh, what am I going to get?
Because there's always the thing where if you can just see like the item just like in like the pile of loot and know exactly what it is, then fuck that, I'm not gonna pick it up. At least it's like opening like a present.
Right, exactly. And there is that slight build up. I mean, Blizzard's great at making a slot machine. You know, that's all World of Warcraft was, and that's really what Diablo is.
It's just a satisfying action to do.
But, in Town Portal, like, you know, there's a scroll of Town Portal to wherever you're at in the world map in Torchlight 2 or Diablo 2. You use this Town Portal scroll, it opens up, you walk through it, and then you're back in town. You can sell stuff, repair stuff, whatever you need to do. In Diablo 3, it is a spell that has zero cooldown.
Okay.
So you can do it wherever you want, whenever you want, for any reason.
Well, I mean, as long as you're not surrounded by a horde of enemies. I mean, there is a cast time.
Yeah, and enemies can't be within, like, 20 yards of you or something. Like, something weird. But it takes the headache out of it. Because one of the things I ran into on the Torchlight 2 video we have up on the site is I didn't have any town portals or town scroll portals. There were no portals or waypoints in the world. So I had to truck my happy ass, like, 20 minutes out of my way to go and sell stuff, repair stuff, and it was just a...
Well, you got the pet that can, like, sell your stuff, though, right?
Yeah, sure, and but mainly for, like, repairing is... Okay.
Oh, they got repairing in it now, that sucks.
Yep, so it's...
Yeah, that is one of the kind of the things I... Like, you know, they did this great thing that, you know, you don't have to buy identify scrolls, you know, and use them, but then you have to repair stuff. And it's inexpensive too. I mean, you just go and you're like, oh, 200, if even that, to repair everything. Okay, that's fine. Maybe it becomes more later on in the game. I don't know. But this is actually something that, and I know we were talking about this earlier because it's on sale right now, that Dead Island actually did pretty well.
Yeah.
Like repairing your stuff is actually pretty pricey, which, okay, yes, you factor in the question of why the fuck are these people charging me to repair my weapons when I'm the only ones going out killing and saving, you know,
right.
Killing zombies and saving these people.
Sounds like you're against capitalism there, mister.
but it's pretty expensive, and money management in Dead Island is pretty well balanced, so you really have to kind of think about what you're doing. I don't know, the repair thing kind of confuses me in Diablo 3.
Yeah, it's bizarre. I mean, the kind of the last thing I wanted to touch on, and I touched on this in the article, but I'm kind of worried that Torchlight 2 is going to be super successful, not because I think it's a bad game, like, far from it, because I love it. It's so much better than the first one. But people are going to buy Torchlight 2, you know, for $20, which is a hell of a deal, and be like, oh yeah, this is going to play exactly the same as Diablo 3, so I don't need to worry about Diablo 3.
Well, I made that got to, like, sell my own article on nitrobeard.com, but I made that comment. It's like, if I can get within, like, 80% of a game for, like, a third of its price, yeah, probably going to do that. I mean, I don't think anyone in their right mind is going to sit there and say, oh, Diablo, Torchlight 2 is $20. It's going to play exactly like Diablo 3. I mean, if you do that, you're stupid.
Right.
But I think it's a valid thing to do.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you're looking at something, you just want a quick co-op game, you love Diablo 2, you really like that style of game, definitely get it. But that's almost selling Diablo 3 short, because the changes it is making are progressive, and it's moving that genre forward It's making changes, but not everyone is going to like the changes it makes.
Now, real quick, tell me, so Diablo, how did Diablo 2 handle, like, powers? I mean, could you have, like, a bar of 10 things that you were launching and stuff?
No.
No,
You had two. You could you had skill trees, so you had dexterity and strength and vitality and all that stuff. And you just, you know, Diablo 3, that's automatically given to you. You're automatically stat upgraded. You don't have a little tree you have to go down. But with Diablo 2, you did have the tree. That's also how gear was made. You had to have 50 defense in order to hold the shield. You know, so you had to grind up stats, not only levels, but stats as well. But it was basically a left click and a right click. And that was it.
Okay.
And then what's crazy is you went from two buttons to six buttons, yet on the internet I'll see tons of people say that you can't have any customization. Which
you can really, because as you progress and you kind of, you unlock different powers, and then each power can be further modified with runes. Mm-hmm. And they're more side grades than upgrades.
Correct.
Which is nice because it's now like, okay, I have a better one. I don't need to use this other one. I'm finding myself switching it up pretty often depending on what kind of role I want to play. Yep. So there's plenty of customization, which is really nice.
And there's no bad choice, which is also a great thing. Diablo 2, there was, you could kind of build your character into a corner and like, well, if I don't use this type of weapon with this type of thing, then I'm going to be terrible. And that's not really the case in Diablo 3 because you can respec at any time.
Yeah. And they're all really well balanced.
Yeah, it's really good game. But yeah, it's great. But Torchlight 2 is also great. And the article's up on the site. I go into a little bit further detail on it. But I mean, both awesome. It's just, I think I like Diablo 3 a little bit more. But yeah, do we want to take a break or do we want to?
Yeah, I gotta sell some more stuff.
Gotta get that jewel from what's his face, the dude that plays Lopan in Big Trouble in Little China.
That's racist.
That's not racist. He's in the game. Okay. Anyway, we'll be right back. We're gonna take a break. We'll be back with what we've been playing and some more news.
Does he have the giant Raiden hat?
No. Hey everybody, welcome back. We are back. And what'd you find, Matt? The Dennis Dyack thing?
Yeah, the headline. I just chuckled at the headline on computerandvideogames.com. Silicon Knights entitled to just $1 in damages and epic losses.
So Mark, you got the scoop on this.
Well, the scoop being like what I read off of Joystick. But apparently Silicon Knights lawyer took so long to like reveal what damages they were seeking in their ongoing lawsuit with Epic, apparently revolving the whole like Unreal Engine 3 fiasco where they claimed like they never received the tools.
Oh right.
Despite the part where like the entire video game industry was based off of like Unreal Engine 3. So the judge decided that at the end they're gonna get $1 if they win.
That's fantastic.
Well, they spent so long trying to think of like, because you have to ask for what you think is an appropriate amount to get for that lawsuit.
Right.
And since Silicon Knights did not respond to the judge's requests, He was like, all right, a dollar. That's fine. Whatever.
So the neat thing is the judge took a look at Silicon Knights assets and their games and what piece of shit that Norse game that they had. What was the name of it? The Valkyrie game.
Human.
Too Human. There you go. He took a look at that and said, yeah, you know what? This is worth a dollar. That's about right. And the sad part is, you know, Dennis Dyack was like, we're going to rely on this, like, pay his rent.
Right.
Well, they can appeal this really easily because it's, I mean, if they win, they can easily say, hey, this is just a thing, the judge being a dick. Can you guys, you know, look at this again?
Right.
But if he wins, is a bridge far off in the long future, I think.
Yeah.
But I the thing I'm enjoying about this lawsuit the most is that video game writers and, like, I guess serious business journals are having to use the word epic lawsuit in a non-ironic manner.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
That's fantastic.
It's very weird that there's two really big lawsuits going on this week.
Which is the other?
Infinity Ward versus...
Yeah. Project Icebreaker.
Did you see that they revealed the... In the court documents that came out, they found that the two guys at the head of Infinity Ward were getting something like $3 million apiece in bonuses.
Yeah, the bonuses for the top 20 employees, or top 20%, something like that, got 75% of the bonus.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, Jesus. Wow. What a bunch of scumbags.
Yeah, kind of. Well, I mean, they...
What a bunch of business
battle,
as usual.
It's a big battle of egos, basically. And the court documents also revealed, like, I don't know why this came up, but they had to, like, have an actual description of Bungie's project with Activision.
Oh,
which is Gasp and Shock, a first-person shooter with fantasy sci-fi elements.
Oh, boy.
Well, that sounds
It's steampunk-based.
Yeah.
Yay.
I hope it's based around maybe some big rings in the sky.
I hope I get to hold two weapons at once.
Oh, man.
It's being built for the 360, which seems weirdly short-sighted considering we haven't seen any of it.
That is kind of silly.
Yeah, they don't have a lot of time left to sell that. Because right now, Microsoft is all about the Kinect, and they're not really going to spend any money touting anything that's not that or Halo 4. So,
well, near as I can tell, this generation ends February.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's where everything's being sold at.
Mark, I just want to make sure you did not just say Hitler 4.
You said Halo 4.
Right. I totally
just checking.
Said Halo 4.
Okay.
Wait, what are Hitler 2 and 3?
Well, Hitler 2 was the boys in Brazil.
No, no. Hitler 2, probably according to Mark, would be Deus Ex 2.
Wait. Deus Ex 2 was an amazing game. What the fuck's wrong with you? That's like best game
and
I've played.
And that's why Hitler 2 has been swept under the rug.
That's right.
So you'll acknowledge Hitler, but you won't acknowledge Invisible War.
What's Invisible War?
I don't know what Hitler 3 is, though. Let's say it was...
Idi Amin, I guess. He ate people. That's pretty hardcore.
All right. Anyways.
Stalin?
Halo 4. So do they really need to promote it? I mean, it's a Halo game. It's gonna sell.
I don't know. Anniversary did pretty badly. As far as Halo games go.
That was the first game. Did they ever, like, market Anniversary that much? And it was the first
commercials.
Yeah, everything has commercials. It wasn't, it wasn't the media event that, like, a Halo game usually is.
Right, and again, it didn't help matters that the multiplayer was literally just the Reach multiplayer.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't even bother to make it sound. They made, like, 4 multiplayer maps. But then you could get those maps in Reach. So...
I always got the idea that the remake was trying to convince, like, the hardcore Halo guys that these people that have taken over Halo know what the hell they're doing, so please buy the next game, which they did by, like, just making a complete remake of, a classic game.
Yeah.
The thing is, they didn't really do anything on Halo Anniversary.
Yeah.
Like, the gameplay is identical to Bungie's first Halo game, and the multiplayer is literally Halo Reach.
Mm-hmm.
Says yeah. So the creative wise, they did nothing. So it kind of makes you wonder what the hell Microsoft got out of this entire project.
I have a morbid curiosity about what Halo 4 is going to be like because they've been so cryptic about what caused Ryan Payton to leave. Because he apparently had some idea that they could just not get eye to eye on, and it made him leave the company.
It's going to be Kinect support, isn't it? They're going to shove Kinect.
No, they're going to want to keep Master Chief alive forever. And Ryan Payton is like, kill him. He's a stupid character. Kill his ass. Make sure he's never alive for anything else ever again.
They should do it like Mega Man X and just kill him at the end of every game.
I was so excited at the end of Halo 3. Oh, man, I really was. They were saluting the 117. I was like, yeah, man, he's dead. I don't have to worry about him no more.
Remember, remind me exactly, because I played this damn game. It just shows you like what kind of impact the Halo games have. What happened at the end of Halo 3? Was he like just like floating in space? Yeah.
He was part of a big shipwreck or whatever, and then everyone thought...
I just remember seeing like the little thing signed onto the metal thing at the end. That's like the only part of Halo 3 attending.
That's
I remember.
Like they built a little statue thing for him, and some little kid carved 117, which is Master Chief's call sign. And then, like, I guess Anderson was saluting it. His name's Anderson, right?
He's from London. He's from London.
He's also from Mass Effect.
He is from Mass Effect London. But, yeah, did the salute. And then, after you beat the game on Legendary, after the credits, it showed the spaceship, and he was still on the ship. And then he said, wake you when you need me, which I interpreted as wake me when you need a sequel. And then... and then Cortana was like, okay, I'll wake you up with the time.
That's funny. Why would the developers put this message in it to themselves?
It's always heartbreaking when you see a game that has like an extremely final ending and then a sequel's announced.
Yeah.
Like, as much as I love Infamous, if they announce Infamous 3 and it starts cold again, that's going to be really fucking awkward.
Because that
game is ended. That's like... That story, Cole's story at least, is over.
Yeah.
Did he die? Because I never played it. I don't know if we
I don't want to say.
Spoiler warning?
Because it's a podcast.
Okay.
I'll tell you after the podcast, but that Cole's story is very much over.
Yeah.
He became a dad.
A vegetable.
Yeah.
No.
Same thing.
How dare you.
So let's talk about Overkill working on a thing with Valve.
Yeah, yeah.
AKA the guys that made Payday the Heist, which is a pretty fun... co-op bank heist simulator. That's
pretty cool.
It also has like the most passive aggressive swipe at Square Enix I've ever seen in a video game.
Does it?
What's that?
One of the characters, his backstory is that he's a former video game designer whose publisher backed out at the last second and thus cost him or he lost his whole studio. So now he's robbing banks.
Oh shit.
Oh god.
That's pretty
right.
That's
so
awesome.
But yeah, so they've said that apparently they're working on a quote-unquote in-depth Payday/Left 4 Dead collaboration. And I don't know what that means. I don't know if that means like content from either game crossing over into the other, or if it means like an actual game.
Yeah.
Well, it'd be pretty random.
I'm setting my expectations really low. My thought is just going to be like it's a high set and no mercy.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like there's all this chaos going down. Like hospitals are exploding. But these bank robbers are like, you know what? No one's looking. Let's do this. Like, that actually be pretty fun. Like, you have to fend off not only police and other frantic people, but then these zombies busting in after you.
Or it could be like the Payday guys have been transported into a zombie world, a la Rise of the Apes. And they have to fight off like zombie cops.
The more you say it, I do want it to go more way fictional. Like they find a glass orb, and then the orb.
We've got to get the orb to the crystal skull.
Yeah.
That actually reminds me of the Kanan Lynch mode in Lara Croft and the Guardian of Light.
Oh right, yes,
that was fantastic.
We're like. You know, Xanthos, the evil giant, you know, witch doctor demon pops in and is like, you two, I'll drag you both down to hell if you rob my things again. And Kanan Lynch just looks over, or Kane, and he goes, what the fuck?
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty great. So, yeah, so I don't know if it's, a whole new game thing. Or if it's just a... I don't know. It's weird.
So I pray it's a game, but I mean, I got to check my expectations a little low.
I think it might just be a Left 4 Dead map in Payday.
Yeah.
I think.
So, or
we'll find out.
A Payday campaign in Left 4 Dead would be pretty cool, too.
Yeah, that would be cool. So, right. Yeah. So we'll find out. But either way, it's really interesting and neat nude. Neat news.
Oh,
neat
dude.
Oh, hey.
That's the twist.
I mean, Valve obviously thinks something of these guys to work on some kind of collaboration, which, and rightfully so. It's Payday is a really well polished and fun game.
I'm just glad they have not forgotten Left 4 Dead 2 exists.
I know. Yeah. That's my biggest. Everyone's talking about Half-Life 3, but the more I think about it, I'm like, you know what? They need to go back to Left 4 Dead. But it's good that they're waiting a little bit to do it, because I think they could do some really incredible things.
I think they've mined out Left 4 Dead 2 in that there's nothing more they could really add at this point without it like severely compromising the fundamentals of that game. Mm-hmm. So just go ahead and make a new game.
Yeah,
we can add low gravity.
That's true. Low gravity breaks that game in amazing, beautiful ways.
Is it like the Morpheus map in Unreal Tournament?
Oh, man. Love them.
That is such a rad map.
I played that map so much on Instagib.
Yes, sir.
So you just get the, what is it, the pulse rifle or whatever? The
lightning rifle.
Yeah. No, it was the, I don't remember the name, but it is like the pulse rifle where, like, you know, you can right click to shoot the ball, and then if you shoot the ball, you know, it'll explode. Yeah, but anyway, so I played a shit ton of Instagib on that. Love that game. All right. So we already know what Wes has been playing.
Yeah, yeah.
So Matt, you actually, if you touched on anything, given that, you know, the birth of your daughter was X days ago.
Well, it's been 2 weeks since I've been on, but you know, baby sleep. So you know, you could put right the baby now down on a cushion and play something. So I started playing Xenoblade Chronicles, and it's pretty damn good.
Yeah, man.
Not very far in, only about an hour in, but it's technically extremely impressive.
Cool.
It's kind of neat to hear the voice acting, though. It seems that the way that they save money was not to redo all the voices with American accents, which is...
Yeah, it's all just British.
Yeah, just fine by me.
It actually weirds me out a little because they sound like people I know. That's one of the reasons I couldn't play Inazuma 11 on the DS, because it was only a British dub. I was like, I hate British kids, and this is because I've had to deal with British kids. So it's
do they go around begging for gruel?
No, but they have like those annoying Chav accents. It's like, I can't play this game anymore.
You know, I have to wonder if in other... I've never really been into RPGs that much, so maybe this is just me being completely ignorant, but do they normally dub it both in American English and British English?
Not usually.
Okay.
There's some cases for, like, say, text-only games, they'll add the appropriate use or whatever. Right. But usually if it has one language track in English, that's good enough for them.
Yeah, because
they will dub it
like
in French English.
What?
It's like a... No, I like this.
Well, yeah, they would have been French English. Right? Like, ha, ha, ha. That's basically...
That's all it says.
Yeah.
They do have some multi-5 support for a lot of games these days, but that doesn't... They don't have a change for American English to British English. Usually it's just English of any stripe, then French, Spanish... Italian, yeah.
It would be great if, like, the British English was just the American track, but, like, whenever the, like, a British, like, different word in the American pops up, you just have this British lady, like, just saying the word. Like, when somebody says truck, just this lady comes up and says lorry.
That would be pretty good.
There's a lot of colloquialisms in it, but, you know, it's an RPG, so it skews towards a slightly older audience, so I don't think that's really going to confuse any American players. Mm-hmm. And if they can get over all the insane terminology in an RPG, they'll get over all the British colloquialisms.
Right.
Now, is this like a sci-fi RPG or like fantasy RPG, or what kind of setting are we talking about?
Both.
It's a JRPG, so it's the mashing of the two.
It's like it's a fantasy world that happens to be on the back of a giant robot monster.
Okay.
Yeah, and all the weapons, you know, people fight with swords and blades that are also somehow technologically advanced.
So basically JRPGs since
swords with circuitry.
Yeah, you run everywhere even though there's hovering, like, tanks and
circuitry.
Vehicles.
Circuitry.
the issue where like you have like laser tanks and missiles that everybody's fighting with melee weapons. Yeah.
Like,
well, all the bad guys are like robots is the big thing.
And right in the beginning of the game, there's debris falling on the town, and they like break out these anti-aircraft laser cannons and shoot them out of the sky. But you're still gonna slice people with a sword.
Yeah, it's the only way you can really kill a robot.
Yeah,
it's proven.
That's cool. And I know Imran was actually streaming some Dragon's Dogma, his first kind of initial run through today, right?
Yep. So last couple of days have been weird because I've been playing two games, one of them being Dragon's Dogma, as Brian said, and the other being Final Fantasy 13 2. And it occurred to me today that these are both JRPGs that are trying to appeal to the West, but using totally different bases. Like, Final Fantasy 13 2 is trying to be a JRPG that appeals to the West as a JRPG, and Dragon's Dogma is trying to be one that appeals to the West as a Western RPG.
Right.
And
so how much like Demon's Souls is that thing?
A lot. It's a lot like Demon's Souls, in that also, you die very easily. There was one part where I just had to walk to town, and I kept dying because I kept getting hit by these bandits. And, like, one or two good hits will get you stunlocked to the point where you will die easily. So I had to take the long way around and fight wolves, and I picked a bunch of wolves up and threw them
over
the
cliff. Yeah, you threw some wolves off a cliff. That was pretty cool. But then one of them, like, survived the fall, so your pawns were trying to... they were, like, kind of just running along the edge of this cliff trying to attack this wolf.
So I tried to kill it and ended up falling off to my death.
But then Imran also, for anyone who doesn't know, the basis of the game is that you have your character that you control, but then you also have these pawns, which are, you know, computer controlled characters that are on your team. And and Imran made Andre the Giant.
Yes. We couldn't think of a good name for him too, so we're looking up Princess Bride quotes, and someone was finally like, "Great, thanks." So I just put that in all caps.
All caps, great thanks.
So great, and you guys tried to peer pressure me into making his personality a wannabe suitor for my main character.
Right.
And I agreed to it because I'm terrible.
Yeah.
So now he's like flirting with me and it's weird.
Yeah. But man, your girl is like, what is her name, Lady Girl?
Lady Girl Hagar, yes.
Lady Girl Hagar. She is a freaking shank machine. Like, she is just stabbing dudes left and right.
Yeah, the combat system in that game is really fun and interesting and fast-paced. Like, it's basically the best thing I can compare it to is Amalur, and it's better than Amalur's combat system.
Oh, nice. Is there any sort of lock-on?
No, not that I can see.
Okay, I didn't think so.
Which is probably good, because a lot of the stuff I need to hit is, like, in broad strokes.
Yeah. Yeah, but seriously, her, like, when Imran's running around with her, your character's flaming knives. She looks like the monk from Diablo, just like swinging his arms around super fast. So she just like stabs you four times, then does 180, and then stabs you behind and kicks you in the face. And it looks pretty visceral.
Apparently, mages are also pretty action oriented. So I'm eager to try them out at some point. Like, maybe I'll make a new character or whatever. This game has really stupid DLC.
How's that?
Like. Already? Okay, so they announced last week that there would be 100 quests that you can buy 10 at a time for $2 each, or you can buy the whole set for 7. Then randomly today, they just decided to up the price to 20.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Ooh.
And also, it's $2 for more hairstyles. All this is up today, and it's on the disc because they explicitly said it's on the disc.
Oh, God.
So, yeah.
God. That's ridiculous. But...
So, like, the Undisc DLC for this one, I can understand why in their fighting games they want to do that. What purpose does it serve on a single-player RPG?
They had a whole PR-y answer for this, and it's really stupid, but it's something like, we're trying to give you the best quest experience we can.
Oh, it's a customization of value. I see what they're saying. That's stupid.
And that's fine if you sell that game for $40.
Yeah. But what if I buy it 3 years from now, Mark, used at my local goods store, And
well, you won't, because the local goods store will be out of business because the Xbox Loop won't let you play use games.
But I heard that they're the best selling digital place for going into a physical store and buying digital goods on the market.
Oh, right. The PR excuse was if you got it all, then you would have too much to play.
We have a lot of content, all right? And we're going to do, I know it's a lot to take in, we're just going to spread it out.
We're just going to charge it out.
This makes sense, because this is totally a Japanese Skyrim. It's a very polite Skyrim. Because the main problem with Skyrim is there's too much shit, and you just couldn't control it. So what they're doing is they're helping you out by getting rid of that.
Yeah, yeah.
And making you and charging you money for it.
Right, here's the exact line. Dragon's Dogma's post-launch content will extend the lifespan of a title that already offers around 30 to 40 hours of gameplay by following the main story thread. But if a player were to complete all the side quests in Dragon's Dogma shifts with, that increases it to around 100 hours.
And we can't sell you guys a 100-hour-long game. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
What the hell do you think?
Even though it's there already.
Yeah, even though it's already there. Yeah.
So,
but quest design in this game isn't great to begin with, so I don't really feel I'm missing a whole lot. Because, like, for example, when it tells you to do a quest, it doesn't give you any information. It's like, well, I guess this is missing. Go find.
Well, and the save points and checkpoints are a little screwy, it seems.
Yeah, you get an autosave when you exit or leave an area, but there's massive expanses of things between each area. So, like, I could be in this town for a while, and then all of a sudden I'll be attacked by a giant snake, but whoops, it didn't checkpoint since I first entered the town.
Now, correct me wrong, because I never actually played them, but Dragon's Age 2 and Kingdoms of Amalur.
Oh, you gotta play quick at some point.
Yeah, I will. No, I can't stay away from it. But did that allow, like, quick saving anywhere?
Yeah, Dragon Age 2 did in the PC version. I'm pretty sure the same is true of Amalur. I didn't play either on 360, so...
Okay.
But Mass Effect 3 has quick saving anywhere, so I'd assume so.
I'm just thinking that's a very Japanese thing, not allowing you, like, to save anywhere you want. And that
you have to hit pause, then hit back, then it will save it for you, and it takes about... I would say 5 to 7 seconds. A weirdly long time.
Okay. But you're not stuck there with it, like you lose progress.
It's rely so much on autosaves in these RPGs or like a quick save button. It's kind of crazy that I'll make 15 minutes of progress and lose that 15 minutes because the autosave is very strict about where it works. But it's just... The big thing so far to me is just quest design is bad. It's like there was a thing.
That's because
like,
you didn't buy the good ones, Imran.
Apparently, if I had spent the $20 instead of the $7 they told me, it was going. I would have actually spent $7 for 100 quests. That's not a bad deal.
That's a good, decent bargain. Yeah.
It's actually really bullshit and very anti-consumer to suddenly raise the price on that stuff. But
I wonder like how that metric worked out. If there was some marketing guys just looking at the numbers and us, oh hey, we can charge 3 times as much. What the hell's wrong with us?
I think that was probably what happened. I think they decided that they were not going to get the people who are angry about on-disc DLC, so the people who are going to buy it anyway just bilked the money out of them. But yeah, I'll spend more time with the game. It's fun. It's just, it's a Capcom game.
Yeah,
well. All that entails. Also, it would look way better on PC. For some reason, they letterboxed the game on the console.
I noticed that you took screenshots, and it made a really weird border, like around them. And I can only imagine what the letterbox looks like. Like, is it really obtrusive? Like, can you notice the black bars around it? Or
I can notice it, and I notice it a lot more when I I'm running around.
Right.
But, it's very dumb.
Yeah, it's silly.
It's. I think it's something that they're pushing the 360 to its limits, or the 360 and the PS3. And so they're choosing not to render X number of pixels.
Yeah.
Mm.
But this game really should have a PC version.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, then we could pay more money to get a... An overbearing full content game.
Yeah, there's something about giving that away on well, not giving away on PC, but selling on PC. There's no way you can make that stupid DLC program work. Because we just, like, hey, oh, now it's unlocked. Thanks, guys.
Right, there's a hack for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, cool.
But, yeah, anyone else have any other games that they're playing?
Playing Stalker. Because, you know, I got my PC now, and I can actually, like, catch up with shit.
Yeah.
That thing's fucking depressing, man.
Yeah, it is.
Yep.
And that is Russian as hell.
How Russian do you feel right now?
Man, that thing is some Russian ass shit. But it's like broken, and I've got the Stalker Complete for it.
Oh, awesome!
And even then, it's still weirdly broken.
Yeah.
Because you know those random like stashes that I'll tell you about, like when you like. Search for a dead guy's stuff, and say, "Oh, I stashed some stuff over here." And like, you go up to it, and like, there's absolutely no way to like actually get to it because it's either underneath geometry or like beside an anomaly that will kill you instantly. So, and it's
not broken. It's Eastern European.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's Eastern European. Yeah. So it's actually malevolent in its brokenness. But I keep trying to compare it to, like, because it's kind of an open world game despite the fact that it, like, constantly loading out, like, different maps. So in that, it's kind of weird. So it's kind of zoned like EverQuest.
Mm-hmm.
But I keep trying to compare it to, like, the open-ended RPGs. But in Skyrim, like, if I go into a dungeon, I'm fairly sure I'll come out of that dungeon in better shape than when I went in. Right. I'll have something to get out of it. If you like just decide, hey, there's this weird research facility over here, I think I'm going to check it out. Chances are you're going to leave that research facility with fewer bullets and less like food and shit than when you came in. And you got absolutely nothing out of that.
Yeah. Well, so, and there's certain point. Which one are you playing? Stalker?
The first one.
Shadows of Chernobyl?
I figured I'd start with the first one, then work my way up.
There's a part in the thing about Stalker Clear Skies. I can't remember if it does the same thing, or if a Stalker Shadows of Chernobyl does this. But there are certain times to where you will get mugged.
Oh wow!
And
that's great. You'll
get mugged, but it's not one of those things that I'm gonna find those guys and get my stuff back. No, you don't get your stuff back. You get mugged,
oh, wow.
And they take your guns and they take your weapons and your items, and then they leave, and you don't see them again.
That's great. That's awesome.
And they're random events. So you can see a group of three guys approaching you. Just fucking run. Just run as fast as you can the other direction.
I did run into a situation because this game doesn't explain anything to you because, again, it's Russian.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I walked up to an NPC and I hit the trade button and said, "Oh man, I have some extra guns and stuff. I'll trade and get some like first aid kits." And I traded him like a gun I had and like a suit of armor that I had and some stuff. And I left. I was like, "Wait a minute, I don't have a gun or a suit of armor anymore." Oh, crap, I sold it to that guy. Not a huge deal. I'll just buy it back. And that stuff was gone.
Yep.
Like, he didn't equip it or anything. It's just vanished into the ether. So, man.
Ask him about it. Like, you know that shield? What shield?
What shield are you talking about?
The one they just gave you, like, 2 minutes ago.
That actually happened to me, like, in Shadows of Chernobyl. Like, the very first thing you do is you walk up to a door and guy's like, "Well, you got to holster your gun if you're going to come in here." So there's no, like, it doesn't tell you. Every other game would pop up with, like, "Press H to holster your gun." Stalker does not. So I'm pressing buttons and, like, I accidentally drop my gun. Then the guy from, like, the next table just, like, comes up, picks up my gun, and just keeps walking. I can't do anything about it because I don't have any guns anymore.
You saw nothing.
Well, so I sold this guy all my stuff, and I did have a shotgun left. I think, well, I can't leave this area because I'll die. Because I have nothing left. I do have a shotgun and some bullets. My only choice here is to kill this guy and his friend and get my stuff back. Mm-hmm. And I figure that's morally correct because he ripped me off.
Right.
So I wait until nightfall, because this is a thing you can do. You can wait until nightfall in this game. And these guys will still be in their usual like routes and everything, but you can like they won't see you. So I like shoot him in the back of the head. I said, "Fuck you, I'm getting my stuff back." My stuff was still gone. He didn't have it.
They sold it, man. They sold it.
Yeah, that shit's gone. It's like vodka now, and vodka and meth. So, great.
I traded it for vodka.
Yeah, so I guess I got, like, the pistol that he had on him, the asshole, because I gave him, like, an AK-47. I got a pistol back out of it, and now I have to kill his friend. And now, like, the mutants are going to overtake this facility because I just killed the only decent human beings left around here. So that's just great. That's a depressing game.
Oh, it's so good. So good. And if you dig that, I think... Did you already play Metro 2033?
Yeah, I played Metro. Okay. I played Metro and I love Metro. Oh, God, I love Metro.
Yeah. So they're fairly similar.
Did you play Cryostasis, Mark?
Did not play Cryostasis. Cryostasis exists. I should totally play Cryostasis.
Really should, because that's... Yeah. I'm just gonna throw that out there, and I'll let you do with it what you want. But you should play.
And then if you want all sorts of jank, you can buy I Divine Cybermancy.
Oh, oh man,
I Divine, that game weirds me out for reasons I can't.
It
explain.
Is very. It's like so a weird fever dream.
Good and weird.
Very
yeah.
unnerving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You walk in and ominous. People have those weird. Yeah, those masks that have no emotion, and they're staring at you, and like, go get the brosifs. And then you're like, oh.
Yes, all the brosifs.
Oh man, but yeah.
I've pretty much just been playing Diablo 3, mm-hmm. and then I've been playing a super secret game that I hope I can talk about sometime soon.
Oh man,
it's Diablo 4.
I'm not gonna reveal what it is.
Diablo 9.
It's got a time machine.
But it's a lot of fun, and I've been testing it with David Marchman and Brian Laper. I could totally see this game becoming like a weekly Nitro Beard thing that we do.
Wow.
Is this Half-Life 3? Did you get hold of Half-Life 3?
Team Fortress 3, that's amazing.
That's right. So I haven't been playing a whole lot. It's been a busy week, of course, gearing up for the birth of my wife and our son.
Your birth
so.
Of your wife? What?
The birth of...
What the hell's going on?
A wife and me.
Which Twilight movie was that, or Twilight book?
The last one, I think. Well,
why do you know that?
Basically,
that was a trick question. Movies. Good setup, Imran. Yeah. High five. All right. I've not had a lot of time. I've got like a level 26 monk, and like a level 15. You know, I have not seen a lot of barbarians.
There aren't a lot. That's going to be my next class on the.
Yeah. So I've got a level 15 barbarian named Susan.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's pretty much it though.
Oh man, but yeah, that I guess that does it for episode 87. It's been a good cast, guys, and once again, Matt, congratulations birth of your child.
Thank you.
And Brambolito, we're anticipating you got to
be there soon.
We got to.
I've been watching all your tips.
Yeah, Matt tweeted. I tweeted. You got to tweet and let us know, man.
I will. I'm going to practice swaddling myself in a regular bed.
Just get a sleeping bag and be like, ugh. The secret to a good swaddle is to actually tuck the blanket under the like the shoulders, because otherwise they'll just karate kick their way out of it. But
you know that's supposed to help with insomnia.
Really?
Being swaddled, yeah.
Yeah, it's probably the warmth, and it's weird. Just sometimes babies just want to be held. It's the most bizarre thing. They'll be just really fussy, and you'll hold them, and then they'll just fall asleep for 5 hours. You know,
sounds like my cat. My cat would just like walking around going meow, 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 and then I'll just like pick it up and just kind of walk around with it a bit.
By the scruff of its neck.
No.
All right, guys. Well, it's been 87. Thank you guys so much, and we'll see you next week.
Night, everyone.
Hi. Yep.